It is my great pleasure to introduce Silke Vandasalara, did I pronounce that?
Yeah.
Great, excellent. Who is visiting with us from Louvain University at the moment, who is doing research on social network analysis in the humanities, very much an emergent area. She is braving a nasty sort of reflection to give this talk, so I think it will not go on quite as long as normal, which means we will have sort of more time for discussion and deliberation afterwards. So, retracing theme and witnesses, Silke.
Hello everybody, thanks for coming first of all. As Stuart just said, I am on very heavy pain medication, so I'm a bit wobbly and not all there, but I'll try and be clear about it. But if you have any questions, if it's not as clear as it would normally be, just ask questions afterwards. I'll be very happy to try and make it more clear. Retracing theme and witnesses, that's what I'm going to talk to you about today. First of all, Thebes was an ancient city in Upper Egypt, and it's most known, of course, for its beautiful temples and the Valley of the Kings, and not to forget the Valley of the Queens, which is absolutely fabulous, of course. And although these sites are quite bewildering, we're not going to talk about any of these today, sadly, but we're going to talk about something even more exciting. We're going to talk about legal contracts. Yes, I can see the excitement in your eyes. So in these legal contracts, there are three main actors. First of all, there's a scribe, of which there is one, two contracting parties, and then mostly there are 16 witnesses, sometimes less, but 16 is about the usual. So actually about the scribe and the contracting parties, we know quite a lot. A lot of research has already been done about those two main actors, but not a lot has been done about those witnesses. And that's because of how they are listed in the contracts. On the verso of the contracts, there's a witness list, and all we get of information about these witnesses is their name and their father's name, if we're lucky, because sometimes if it's broken, or like here on the left, and we don't even know the father's name of a witness. So that's why actually researchers before us have kind of ignored almost the witnesses, because we don't have any information, or not enough information, to do real research about it. So that's where we thought that maybe network analysis could help us to find something more about these mysterious witnesses. First of all, of course, you have to extract your information, your data from the ancient sources, and I'm very lucky that I don't really have to do that myself anymore, because we have a very good database in Leuven, the Trismegistos database, which is the database of all databases, the center of my universe, of course. And there's no better way of explaining or giving a definition of Trismegistos than what's been written on the website of Trismegistos, which you have to read. It's too amazing not to. So it says, Trismegistos, called after the famous epithet of Hermes Thoth, the Egyptian god of wisdom and writing, who also played a major role in Greek religion and philosophy, is a platform aiming to surmount barriers of language and discipline in the study of texts from the ancient world, particularly late period Egypt and the Nile Valley. So if that sentence doesn't get us a Nobel Prize, I don't know what will. But I think that was quite a good explanation. So it's actually a platform of interrelated databases. One of the most important databases is the text database. We have almost 300,000 ancient texts in there at the moment. And then you've got the REF database, which is linked to the text database, and that actually mentions every time a person is mentioned. So for example, if I'm mentioned in three texts, I'll have three REF files. But then also, in another database, the person database, I'll have one file just for my person. So the three references of the REF database will be compiled in that one file person database. So from that, we can quite easily extract a two-mode network and then change it to a one-mode network. So that's all the information, I think, about Trismegistos that you need. So now one of the first problems that we encounter is trying to identify the people, because a lot of names were very common in that period of time. So sometimes people, for example, as I said, if I am mentioned in three different texts, it's quite difficult to know whether that Silke is every time a different Silke or if it's the same one, because they didn't have any surname, they just were mentioned by their father's name or something like that. And if you don't have any more information than that, then it gets quite difficult to identify a person. So, and then they will have three person files, and then if you want to make a network, you'll have three nodes in the network, so it's just not right. Then you end up with a totally wrong network. So we thought that maybe data visualization could help us improve our identification and make it a lot quicker even, because you can do it in a traditional way, but we think that data visualization could be an asset to the traditional cosmography and identification methods. So this is a very simple example. This is a network, and probably no person has yet been identified, because all the nodes, so the little circles, are people, and they are connected if they appear in the same text. That's the only connection at the moment that they have in this network. So it looks like, if you see this cluster here, that's probably just all people being mentioned in one text, and that's why they are all linked together. So now if we want to try and identify some people, we notice that the red nodes that you can see, I don't know if it's visible, these were nodes with all the same name, Diodotos, which is quite a common name. So we didn't have any other information. So you cannot immediately say, oh, it's the same person, because it's from the same period and the same provenance. It's not enough information to identify that those four nodes as being the same person. But then, if you look at the context of in which that person, Diodotos, is mentioned, you can see that it was every time mentioned with another person called Metakos, which is quite a rare name. And we knew something more about this Metakos. This Metakos was mentioned every time as being a tax collector in grain, so we're quite sure that that is actually the same person. So all the blue nodes, Metakos, should actually be one node. It should be just one person. And then because this Diodotos every time mentioned with this Metakos, that gives us an extra argument to saying that this is probably actually the same person. So it's a lot quicker than having to go through all those texts and trying to remember which name you saw, which other name. It's just a lot easier. It doesn't really give you any new information, but it helps speed up your research. And so that's why we think it can be very so this is just a visualization of what I just said. If you start in the ref database with all the mentions and you haven't done the identification yet for the red person, for example, you can have 10 mentions, but actually it's one person, and with normal traditional cosmography you can maybe in a few days' work bring it back to 5 people, but then if you add data visualization, we think that it goes even quicker, and so together with those, get a better and quicker results. So now this is quickly some introduction to social network analysis and to the networks I'm going to show now about the Theban scribes and witnesses. Here we will see a network of nodes connected to each other, and they are connected. So if, for example, I think it's if scribe A writes a contract for contracting party X, and scribe B has also written a contract for contracting party X, then they will be connected now in this network. That's their connection now. So that is how all these nodes are connected. These are all scribes. Those nodes are all scribes, and they are connected because they have done a job for the same contracting party. So immediately what you can see is that the center one, A343, seems quite important, and it would be nice to immediately think like, oh, he could be the main scribe, and the nodes surrounding him, because they have worked for the same contracting parties, could maybe be his associates or something like that, but that's a bit speculative, of course. but wait for it. We thought, because we know about the scribes, that that it's a kind of family business. So the notes surrounding A343, if they are his associates, then you would expect them to, or definitely a few of them, to be family or to be related to A343, Esmini's central one. So I added family links, and this was very disappointing because the only thing that happened was that a few nodes were added to the network, but nothing else really happened. So it didn't show any other relationship with the nodes surrounding Esmini's. So then I thought, okay, either there's a problem with the theory of family business and scribe thing, which is probably not the case, or there's a problem with my network, which is a lot more plausible, of course. So I was curious and I looked into this. And I added, these are the same nodes, but all the father's names have been added to them. So all the smaller nodes are the father's, but we only have the name of those fathers, so nothing else. Not their father's name or nothing else. And then I asked the software to color all the nodes red, who are called Esminis. So then actually I could see that the nodes surrounding Esminis, some of them had a father's name Esminis, but it hadn't been identified because we didn't have any other information. So if we go further in this theory that they could be then sons of Esminis, then all the nodes in red now here would be all related to each other, which seems already a lot better in this network. Then I went on for a bit because you can see that on the right side there looks like there's a quite important node as well, Tortaios, and I'm not going into details about this, but I kind of applied the same principle here, and I found out that they should all be related, all the ones in those circles were probably all related to each other, and so the three circles are related to each other as well. And so just this was all in one day's work. I made my own family tree just, you know, for fun. It wasn't something that I was going to publish or really talk about because I thought, well, it's too speculative, you know, to do that. But I was just curious, and so I was doing this at night. And then I found an article of the great Professor Pestman, a very well-known papyrologist. And he had actually done some research on those scribes, which is, on the one hand, it shows that I hadn't done a lot of work because it was just in one day and I hadn't really looked up the articles. But on the other hand, it was really useful because I saw that he had done the same kind of research but with another method, and he had actually quite the same kind of family tree. So just in one day's work, what I did, and I wasn't a specialist in these scribes or those families, I could make up almost the same family tree as the great Professor Pestman did. So, and he probably worked on it a bit more than one day, so it shows how much it can help us just in being quicker, and yeah, how that can be a real asset to our work. I hope I've convinced you of that a bit. So now finally I'm going to try and talk about the witness networks. We're focusing on the early Ptolemaic period, that's roughly the 3rd century BC, about demotic contracts. Here the nodes are all parties, and they are related to each other if they've appeared in the same text, so if they've had a contract written together. So we've got some extra information on these. We actually know for almost half of those contracts to which archive they belong to. So we have to use all the information we can get, and the colors that you can see, they represent the archives. As you can see, it's quite nicely clustered, the archives together, which is logical because, well, contracting parties, they are very closely connected to the archives, of course, so this is not a surprise. Then I did the same again, so all the nodes that you're going to see in all the networks that follow, they are all parties, contracting parties, but they are connected in different ways. Here they are connected through scribes that they used in common. So now it looks very different, and the colors, so the archives, they're just all mixed up, which is logical as well, because scribes didn't tend to just write for one archive or just one family or whatever, so this is logical as well. This is all going to make sense in a minute. And here, these are the same notes, again, the same contracting parties, but here they are connected according to the weaknesses they have in common. Now, at first, when I first looked at it, I thought, oh, well, the colors, they look a bit more clustered than they were definitely for when you use the scribes connecting the contracting parties. But it wasn't really clear, so this is the same network, but just another layout. And here you can say, yeah, it looks, it's definitely not random. The colors are much more grouped together. Yeah, then I used an algorithm, I'm not going to go into specifics, an algorithm of the software, and I asked actually the software, how do you see this network, and can you give me the communities or the groups that you see in them? And the software doesn't have any other information, it doesn't know about the archives whatsoever, but if you look at this and at the previous one, it's quite similar, even though we don't know for half of the text to which archive they belong to. It groups it almost, well, fairly good actually, definitely for the information we have. So this could, I don't think it can be described as being random, and that can mean two things, and it's important for two things, so these are the same networks again, just as a comparison. First of all, that community detection algorithm could help us probably assign some text to archives, so ones that we are not sure about now because they've been digged up in clandestine diggings or whatever, we can try and see, oh, maybe this could be an argument for ascribing it to a certain archive. Of course, you have to do the other research as well. You cannot just go on these visualizations, but it could help you or make you ask different questions. But most importantly for my research, of course, because there seems to be definitely a relationship between archives and witnesses because of how the parties are now connected to each other, I think that the first one that you've seen, where the contracting parties were definitely clustered according to archive, I think it shows that witnesses are definitely more connected to contracting parties than they were to scribes, which was my main question: how were witnesses chosen? And you can see that it's not a random thing here. I think that it steers us toward the interpretation of witnesses being chosen by contracting parties. Of course, this is now what I've achieved now, but I will try and do some calculations with that, so, you know, to satisfy those statisticians out there and not just go on these data visualizations, but so it can be really useful, those visualizations and network analysis, for those two things in deciding which texts belong to which archives, and also in trying to find something out more about these witnesses and how they were chosen. So I hope I made myself clear enough. If you want to know something more, you definitely have to check out our blog or check out Trismegistos, like us on Facebook, all the social media thing, tweet us, whatever. Thank you for your attention.
So, floor's open for questions.
Well, you did question it. Why 16 witnesses? Why the number 16? Did they use an alphabet? Did they count 1 to 10? Or was there a different counting system? I can't. 16 struck me as an odd number to have.
Yeah, I don't really know why it's 16. I think they are even better at answering these questions.
I never asked myself, really.
Yeah.
It's always been 16, I don't know why.
Occasionally
it's 12, but it's rare. Sometimes it's 4. And in the early period, you sometimes have more. And there is one contract where there are like 30 something. But normally it's 16, and I don't know why it's.
They're all men.
Yeah, they're all men.
And then they're all men.
Yeah, they write, they sign themselves, it's in their own hands.
That's also why it's quite interesting, because it almost must have been a social occasion with all those people in the same place, so that's what makes it really interesting, so we first have to try and solve these questions, how they were chosen, why those people exactly, so that's what driven me to this research now. And I hope it's social ethic and us to find some more answers than has been done in the past.
They write meaning on parchment?
It's on papyrus.
On papyrus.
You
were going to say it, you hang on.
And they place their names directly, the name list begins directly on the back of the papyrus, behind the word Jed says on the front, which is written in quite bold writing, so you can see immediately where it is. They turn it over and they put a line, and then they write their names underneath that, which probably means that they are attesting to having either read the document, improbable, or had it read out to them, and are therefore saying this is a true representation of what we heard.
And the order is relevant for the names?
The order is a strange thing. Normally, sometimes you have two contracts on the same papyrus, so you have the one is called sale and the other is traditionally called cession, and they're both legal documents, but the two of them are combined to transfer the title. But the witnesses are mentioned twice, are listed twice, and they're almost always in the same order, but there are some very rare cases where people have switched order, where you wonder why,
yes.
Why on earth have they switched there. But they're always the same person. And they're always name and father's name. Very rarely there are some titles, but it's very, very rare.
And very rarely grandfather's name, presumably if there was confusion that Peter, son of Paul, there might be more than one in the vicinity, so you might have the grandfather's name.
And there are also some cases where some of these witnesses have copied the entire text of the contract. Just something like 20 contracts do that. But from those cases, of course, we know that at least some of the witnesses could write well enough to copy an entire contract.
And will they correctly copy? Or did you see mistakes?
There are sometimes small mistakes, but
Nothing
dramatic. It's really, yeah. And in a nice hand, generally.
What would that look like to someone who doesn't know what a nice hand look like?
Well, I mean, it's not
a
hand of a practice hand.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's not someone who writes only. Whereas some of the other witnesses, you have the impression that maybe they didn't write so much.
And no witnesses were also scribes?
Yes.
There are some of which we know that they were scribes. So maybe it's a mixture, because
yeah,
it shows quite, I mean, your, what do you call these, graphics, not graphs?
Yes.
Show that there must be a connection with the parties, but we know from at least some witnesses seem to be scribes and seem to be like later become people who wrote contracts.
Yeah, it's probably not going to be so straightforward as they just were chosen by the contracting parties, but. Mm.